The opinions and commentary expressed in the following presentation do not reflect the views of this station, the Economic Club of Indiana, or the Economic Club's agents or sponsors. Support for the Economic Club of Indiana is provided by the Lumina Foundation, with a goal to increase the percentage of Americans with high-quality degrees and credentials to 60% by the year 2025. Focused on ensuring an accessible, responsive, and accountable higher education system.
Welcome to the Economic Club of Indiana. Today's presentation is from Bill Hansen, President and CEO of USA Funds.
Welcome to a great new year for the Economic Club. I'm David Johnson. I'm the President and CEO of the Central Indiana Corporate Partnership. I'm also the President and CEO of the BioCrossroads Initiative, and I have the privilege this year of being the President of the Economic Club of Indiana. This is a highly timely topic. Every second, the student loan debt in the United States grows by an estimated nearly $3,000. Roughly 44 million Americans are carrying around a combined total student debt of nearly $1.4 trillion. That's more than credit card debt. That's more than automotive debt. That is a really, really big number. Americans with student loan debt are increasingly delaying the milestones of life and adulthood, such as marriage and home buying and childbearing. And student debt, of course, stays with you for a long time. Fortunately, our guest today, Bill Hansen, is recognized as a national leader in the education sector, including involvement in organizations that support higher education access and success. Bill brings more than 30 years of involvement in K-12 and post-secondary education to the wonderful work he's doing at USA Funds today, including his experience with 12 years in public service and 20 years in the corporate and nonprofit sectors. He served as Deputy U.S. Secretary of Education from 2001 to 2003, acting as the department's chief operating officer, and he played a key role in implementing the landmark No Child Left Behind Act and helped the Education Department earn its first ever independent clean financial audit. No small accomplishment there. Bill's been the president and CEO of USA Funds since July 2013. We had a great conversation at lunch, and although he is relatively new to Central Indiana, I think you'll find that he's a pretty passionate Hoosier today. He's a terrific resident here. Since 1960, the Indianapolis-based USA Funds has served more than 22 million people, making more than $250 billion available in financial aid for higher education. Historically, USA Funds has been known as a student loan guarantor, but it's now moving past that role as of the beginning of this year and increasing its focus on a new mission called Completion with a Purpose, and I think Bill's going to talk to us a fair amount about that today. It's a multifaceted initiative that aims to decrease the percentage of students who start but do not finish post-secondary education, prepare students for a more successful transition into today's workforce, and really tries to get at solving some of the core problems that students, employers, and higher education are currently experiencing. With its new guiding principle of completion with a purpose, we'll find out how USA Funds is adhering to its historic mission while, as all of us need to do from time to time, retooling, redesigning, and re-strategizing in response to changes in the student loan industry, the needs of students themselves, and a rapidly evolving and changing world. So please join me in welcoming Bill Hansen, President and CEO of USA Funds.
Well, David, thank you for that kind introduction. And it really is an honor to be with you all today, and I still feel like a bit of an adolescent. I've been here for 3.5 years in Indiana, and I have 10 grandchildren, and all of them are under 8 years old, so I'm hopefully not quite as rambunctious as they are, but I still feel like I'm cutting my teeth literally here. And but just want to thank you, and I just always hope that you know what a wonderful jewel Indiana and Indianapolis are in our nation. And I've had some deep friends and deep relationships from Indiana over the years, and actually when I left the role of Deputy Secretary at the Department of Education in 2003, it was actually former Mayor Steve Goldsmith was working for a company called ACS, and Steve is the one that recruited me to go to ACS, and then when I came here, the first person I turned to was probably my closest Indiana colleague, Carol D'Amico, when we served together back in 2001 to 2003. But I'm grateful for Carol, and again, I think we've got a national treasure with her as our leading workforce development expert in this country. And I would also like to recognize Bill Neal from our board of directors, who is our board of trustees, who is here with us today as well. And just very grateful for the leadership of our board and the vision that they have for us and where we're going as a company. A lot of you are probably wondering a little bit about what USA Funds is, and we're probably still a little bit of a well-kept secret here in Indianapolis on the one hand, but nationally, as David indicated, we have been an incredible leader in the higher education and especially the student loan space since 1960. And our great leader is going back to John Burkhart, who had the vision to set USA Funds up in 1960. This is a very interesting time in our country. In 1957, the Russians launched Sputnik, and it really got America kind of doing a quick crash course in what was important to us to keep up with them, both militarily but also from an education and an economic standpoint. And a lot of things started in motion in Congress. A year later, for the first time ever, other than the GI Bill, created the first federal student loan program called the National Defense Student Loan Act. And that was then built upon in 1965 when Lyndon Johnson was president and a lot of the Great Society programs were created. And that's where the big student loan, the Guaranteed Student Loan Program that most of you are aware of was created. But it was really these pioneers here in Indianapolis with Mr. Burkhart and some of his colleagues that really were looking out for the low-income students and for those that couldn't afford to go to college, and were also looking forward to the whole college landscape changing from the old traditional model where 60 years ago half of our students went off to private colleges and universities and half went to public universities. Today it's about 90-10 and those going off to public universities, including the community college system. But what they did was they really helped develop this infrastructure and to show that this guaranteed notion to help leverage private capital would be able to open the doors for students of all backgrounds. And this was really the goal of the Great Society programs, in essence, was to help end the war on poverty and to help level the playing field and give opportunity for all Americans across this country. And so when 1965 came along and the program was first created, that really built the foundation for 1972 when the Pell Grant program was created and the national infrastructure was further expanded. USA Funds was really well positioned to go national, and that's exactly what we've done. We were the designated guarantor in about a dozen states over the years, but we were also a national guarantor. And as David said, we provided $250 billion, and that's with the B, to over 22 million students over the years, and so really a huge impact that we were able to make. And you fast forward to about 2009, the new president at the time and the new Congress decided the federal government should take over all of the student loans in this country, and they did. And so almost overnight, with a stroke of a pen, the public-private partnership that was put together for the previous 50 years was pretty much unraveled. And so the federal government stepped in to make all of these loans directly. And for companies like USA Funds, our business was frankly taken away from us literally overnight. We did have the benefit from a business standpoint and a philanthropic standpoint that we still had $100 billion in our portfolio of loans that we were managing. So since 2009, we've been winding down as the loans are paid off our business. But we've really been sitting on a burning platform. And so when I interviewed for this job back in about this time in 2013, I really was looking at this as a very interesting opportunity with my background in education, government, and business to really be thinking about what could you do with this platform of an asset base of over $1 billion with the mission that's going away, and where is the blue ocean, or what is the greatest need that we have in this country to try to address. And I really had three things that really were sticking out at me that I thought were big national problems. And the first one is that we have about 5 million unfilled jobs in this country of employers that are looking for graduates, but they don't have the skill sets they need to fill these jobs. And we've been in this very rugged economy for the last 10 years, and I just really thought it was a national tragedy that we do not have our higher education system and our workforce system aligned. And so that was one area that I thought we could make a difference in. The other is we also have 36 million working adults who've had some higher education but no degree. And again, with this rugged economy for the last 10 years, and as a father of six kids and five in-law kids that are all 22 to 36 years old, I see it firsthand. None of them are in my basement right now, but I... they have been. But it is real, and it's a very different economy than when I got out of college in the early 1980s and was going through college in the late 1970s. And just the opportunities just didn't seem to be there. And so it's not just this number of 36 million working adults who are looking to retool or to get back to college, but it is also... compounded by this rugged economy for the last 10 years. They haven't had the same job opportunities, haven't had the same career opportunities. So in some ways, we've almost got this cohort of people that have kind of been pent up for 10 years and kind of held back, frankly, from really realizing their dreams and their aspirations and what they would like to be doing. And the third segment of students that I've really been concerned about is the 6 million what we call disaffected students around this country. And these are mostly the low-income disadvantaged students who have nobody in their family that's ever gone to college and mostly nobody that's never even had a job in their family. And so these are really the three populations and the three national areas that I felt strongly about that we needed to go after and that we needed to help make a difference as an organization. And again, we are a pretty unique organization. There are other organizations like us out there, but I sometimes call us a unicorn, but we are a large nonprofit organization, and we're really, but we're also a large business. And so you can think of companies like the Education Testing Service or ACT or the College Board, which are other large businesses that are in the nonprofit realm, but really making an impact in their realm. And so that is what we've really been looking to do. I'm going to get into a little bit about what we've been doing the last 3 years since I've been here, but we did have some very big news on January 1st, as David indicated, where we actually stepped away and transferred our legacy business of a $50 billion student loan portfolio to a company called Great Lakes up in Madison, Wisconsin, and they're doing some of the federal government servicing, so they're going to be in the program for a long time. But it was very helpful for us to, frankly, shed the burdens and challenges and to let another organization who is really going to be doing this into the future to really help these students as they continue through their repayment processes and to allow us to really launch into the areas that I just identified and to really help make a difference and really lengthen our stride to help us get there. So we've been about a couple of major ventures these last couple of years and really putting the building blocks in place to where this day finally came where we're exiting our legacy business. And we are really centering all of our work around what I'm calling completion with a purpose. And there is some great work going on around this country on the world of completion. And I don't want to ever say we've checked off the box on student access, but really what we've done with our 55-year legacy and our history, I do believe that our country, we're unique in the world where we have two-thirds of our students graduating from high school going off to some type of a post-secondary opportunity. It's really the completion area that I think is most challenging for us. And so when I talk about completion with a purpose, it's really to help high school students in particular make the right decisions of whether it's to go to a vocational or a certificate or other two-year type of training, whether to go to a four-year school, what type of degree to get, what type of financing to get, and what type of career or job is all of this going to lead to, and to help them make those right decisions along the way. So we have really built ourselves around three key areas. One is philanthropy that Carol is in charge of. The second is national engagement that Carol's in charge of. She's in charge of everything. and the third is developing our new business enterprise and to, again, make this social impact and this social difference to helping students succeed. And let me just give you a brief overview of a couple of the philanthropic areas in particular that have been under Carol's wing. We really have worked a lot here in Indianapolis and in the state of Indiana with wonderful leaders like Teresa Lubbers and the data program and the college ranking program that has been put together here in Indiana under her leadership is really a national treasure. In Washington, they passed this law to create kind of this national report card, but there are incredible gaps in it. And really, under the leadership with Teresa and with some of the grant funding and other things that we've been able to support her with, this really is a national model for both the federal government but for other states to launch into. We also have worked very closely with President Daniels at Purdue University and creating the Polytechnic High School that's going to be opening up on the east side here this fall. And this is such a great partnership with Mayor Hogsett here in the city. But again, this is going to be, I think, a very innovative STEM-related high school that, again, is going to be a great partnership, helping high school kids get college credit while they're in high school. We also have been working with Teresa on another initiative here that, again, I think is a showcase for the country, where we've been really working with the 21st century scholars, which are the low-income, first-generation students here in Indiana going to college, again, with a grant to support this activity and bringing in a company called Inside Track that really helps coach and mentor these first-generation kids that don't have the infrastructure that most of us in this room would have to help. And again, I've got my younger two kids in college right now, and it's easy for me to text them or pick up the phone if they're having a problem. They've got a great network of friends that they can lean on. A lot of students, especially students of color and Hispanic students and first-generation students, do not have that same infrastructure. And so this grant was very important to help reach out to those populations as well. We also have been working across the board in a number of states to, even though we're Indiana-centric, we are a national organization doing national work. And I'm just very, very proud of the work that we're doing across the country. We launched a competency-based education initiative in Missouri and Nevada, building on similarly what you've got here with Western Governors University in Indiana. We launched a very important statewide STEM initiative in the state of Hawaii. We've got a career pathway project for life sciences in the state of Utah. We've launched a project to reduce the need for remedial education with the governor of Delaware. In Montana, we've launched several important programs, but the two that I'm most proud of are to accelerate degree completion for veterans and also apprenticeships for tribal students, and Montana has the largest number of tribal colleges in the country. And I just was with Governor McAuliffe before the election to launch a project in Virginia to help young adults who are no longer in school work their way back through the community college system and other pathways to help get a quality job and in the state. So we're very proud of the philanthropic work that we've been about and also the national engagement work that we've been about. I want to just tell you a little story about some of the businesses that we're getting into right now. The first one is a company called Road Trip Nation. It's out in Laguna Beach, California, and some of you may have seen their television show. It's on PBS. They've been airing these road trips on PBS for 13 years now. I have a best-selling book called Roadmap on the New York Times best-selling list. But this company was started by three surfer dudes in Pepperdine. They were on the water polo national championship team in 2001. But after, when they were graduating from college, they went and stole their dad's motorhome and painted it this lime green and drove across the country with this idea that they wanted to interview individuals such as you in this room, business leaders, education leaders, government leaders, normal people, and to really find out what their pathway in life was and what their secret sauce was, what their passions were. And this has turned into be a very incredible business, and they've got an incredible data archive of these interviews that really help high school students and college students and people such as us give us some ideas about the pathways in our life. And this was our first acquisition that we made last year to help us create our new business and our new future. And I just wanted to show a brief clip of, this is a short 2-minute clip about a roadmap of veterans coming back to civilian life. And it's called The Next Mission, and it has been showing on PBS the last couple of months.
No one can stay in the military forever. We all get out one day. It's just something that we don't think about, though. When you go back to civilian life, it's different.
It took me a while to overcome my depression and the realization of I'm out.
When I got hurt, everything was stripped from me. It was taken away in an instant. I didn't know what I was going to do.
You know, I feel like an alien. I feel like I'm not even from this world.
What's my next step? Where is my next call?
What am I going to do now? Be passionate about, like I was passionate about the military. So we're gonna be going on a road trip. We're going from the West Coast to the East Coast.
And we're gonna be interviewing veterans along the way.
Gaining experience and knowledge about their transition to the civilian life.
The hardest part about transitioning for me was becoming an individual.
Instead of focusing on, you're never gonna do this again. You know what you can do? Your greatest weapons are right here and in here.
We learn to face our fears and so use those things we learn in the military to not just live in the civilian world, but thrive.
These people, they are really just down-to-earth, amazing people.
This is for home defense in case ISIS comes after us.
Setting out across the country, bonding with all the amazing veterans, it's therapeutic.
I even hate categorizing it, military life, civilian life. Everybody has different roads and avenues in this life.
This has been 30 days, and it's been many things. I'm excited to see what the future has. I'm forever changed.
Those last few tags are important to show the partnership that we do have with the public television and with PBS. So, but this is an important part of who we are going forward, and this is, again, the first acquisition that we brought into the new USA Funds family. We also have brought into the family a company in Cincinnati called Education at Work. This is a nonprofit company. It's frankly a call center, but it's kind of a work-study program for, again, helping low-income individuals come in and do inbound call center work for major national clients. And this gives them an opportunity to learn team-building skills, other life management skills, get paid for doing this, but also if they keep their GPA up at a certain level to be able to get a scholarship for each semester that will hopefully help keep them out of debt. And we really wanted to take this platform nationally. That was the vision of this and why we brought it into to use our national footprint. And back in May, we launched our first major initiative with Arizona State University. It's a small school of 75,000 students. And again, with a very important client that we're working with. It's a national name. And we're looking to replicate this opportunity around the country. We also did a startup company called Student Connections, and very proud of this. This is a spinoff of some of the work that we've been providing to colleges over the years. But we just opened up this new business in Castleton. I think actually the public unveiling is this Thursday. But very proud of this company and what we're doing to help in financial literacy for default prevention and debt management and other types of needs to help students and universities stay on track. The third piece of what we've been doing is also in our investment and thought leadership. And as we're looking to the future and looking to where the changes are in our country, we actually invested, again with Purdue, in with the Back a Boiler program. It's a new kind of student loan program, but it's not a loan. It's called an income share agreement. And this is to really help give students more information on the front end. It's to help bring outside investors in that are going to take a bet on that student and what their degree is, what the marketplace is looking like. and to put together a package that will make sense for that student so the student will not be saddled with the prospects of a ridiculous debt throughout their life that they'll never get out of. And this is an innovative pilot program that we've started, and again, is the type of thing that we think could go national and could be help be a part of the national infrastructure in the $180 billion student loan annual spend that this country puts together. So we think this is a very important initiative as well. I'd like to close by just commenting that bringing all this back to why this is important for you in the room, and again, I've spent my 36 years in the private sector, in the business, as many of you are, in the education sphere that many of you are in, and also in the government sphere. And I think, and also as our role of being parents or being community-minded individuals, these are the four hats that are very important to all of us and to you in the room, as we each have, I think, a stake in this very important venture to help get this right and to help improve the prospects for all of our students in this country, and especially those who are in greatest need. And I just I love the old adage that you know, all boats will be lifted through with a rising tide. And I a few months ago you had Senator Dick Lugar and former Congressman Lee Hamilton here, and they shared the podium and talked about some of the political and social challenges that confront us. And their answer together was just some good old economic growth. And that's really what we're aiming to work on. And again, we are a billion-dollar-plus enterprise in a sea of $500 billion of the higher education enterprise nationally every year. And I sometimes ask myself, am I being too ambitious? Are we being too Pollyannish that we can actually help make a difference in this area? And the answer is yes. And I think that's what we're looking to do each and every day, is how do we leverage in the engagement work and our philanthropic work and our business work to move the needle. And it's really working with people such as you in this room who are in the education space, the government space, the business space, to try to leverage this change. And if I just think about this, the first national problem I talked about, of it's not just, you know, there's a lot of work and numbers out there about the unemployment rate going down, but we still have a major challenge economically in this country with the 10 years of our struggling economy. And it's not just the quality of job or the quantity of jobs, it's the quality of jobs that we're looking for. And so these 5 million unfilled jobs I'm talking about, if we're able to get our higher education system and our workforce systems aligned with the data, with the graduates coming out, I really believe that this will take our GDP problems that we've been happy with 1 or 2% growth these last 10 years. This would really help propel us and to, I think, really be an incredible shot in the arm for our country and from our economic prosperity, which translates to individual prosperity, which we should all be about, of helping to lift the boat for everybody that we serve. I just am very optimistic that I think about the theme of today. It really is change. We've got a lot of change that we just witnessed going on around this country in Washington. We've got a lot of change going on technologically, a lot of change at the higher education institutions, a lot of calls for there to be more accountability and more affordability on college campuses, more transparency. And for our company as well, we've just had a 56-year sea change for our company. And so I just think it's important for us to embrace this change and to look for ways in which we can help change the world, change our country, change our city, change the lives of individuals that we work with. And I tell you, I was just so struck last Thursday. I was at the Indiana State Society Ball in Washington, and it was such an honor to be there with Governor Pence and his wife, but to also be encircled by a couple thousand Hoosiers that were in the room. But it was just amazing to see the legacy of, I think, Vice President Quayle, and I can't remember if it was he or Governor Pence that, or Vice President Pence that said this, but we've had 48 vice presidents in our history. Six of them are Hoosiers. And if you think about that, that's one out of eight. And where I come from in Virginia, we're always very proud of all the Virginia presidents, but I actually think it's pretty cool that we should be very proud of all of the vice presidents from the state of Indiana. But it was also wonderful to be there with Senator Donnelly and Senator Young and Governor Holcomb. And just, I hope you know, as I go out around this country to be viewed of what a national leader Indiana is, as a thought leader, an economic leader, an education leader, with some of the greatest educational enterprises that are here in this state. And I just really believe that all roads are going to go through Indiana in some respects as we try to get these problems solved. And I think it's going to be, I was sitting there at the ball on Thursday night just thinking, wow, we're going to have just an opening for there to be really an Indiana-centric a footprint on what we're doing in so many fields, but especially here in education. And I just want to thank you for all that you do in your respective jobs, again, whether it's in government or at the education level or in business or in your local community and with your family. It really is going to take all of us working together to really look forward to the huge changes that are impacting our higher education system. And we really need to modernize our higher education system to take into account these challenges that I mentioned. And I'm grateful for this chance every day that I have to work with the great team at USA Funds and to work with our great employees and the management team that we have as we're really trying to drive this change nationwide. Thank you very much. And David, I guess we'll have some questions. I hope they're all easy ones.
Oh, they'll all be easy. They'll all be good.
Thank you, Bill. I think the way this will work, I'll get handed some cards at some point. But if not, and certainly to start, I've got a couple I'd like to ask you myself. Again, though, for those of you who have questions, please use the white cards on your table or tweet us at EconomicClubIN. Bill, let's talk for just a minute about where you were on Thursday and Friday last week, and that's Washington, D.C. is a city you know pretty well, and the Department of Education is a place you know pretty well, too. Obviously, that is an agency that's much in the news right now, and a lot of focus on the incoming secretary and really more issues of, I would say, K-12 education than higher education, at least in the public debate right now. But what is the role of the Department of Education in higher education and in the kinds of issues that you are thinking about today as well as some of the ones you've thought about before?
That's a great question, David. And I think it's important to note that at the U.S. Department of Education, it hasn't been around forever. It was created in 1980, the year before Ronald Reagan came in and he campaigned on abolishing it. But it really serves some very important roles in helping our special ed students around the country, helping our K-12 students, helping protect the civil rights of American students, but then also in higher education. And in K-12, only about 8% of K-12 spending, we spend about $600 billion a year on education nationally, only 8% comes from Washington. And almost all of that money is either targeted towards research and innovation or to special needs kids. And that's really what Secretary-designate DeVos has been focusing on, is to help give states and families more flexibility on how to leverage those limited federal dollars through school choice or charter schools. In higher education, it's a very different story. There's about $150 billion in student loans that are made every year, another $30-plus billion in Pell Grant and institutional aid made every year. It's much closer to about 30 or 40% of spending in higher education. And so with that, there's much more of potential strings attached to what goes out the door in higher education. And so on issues like affordability, accountability, the accreditation processes, that's really where I think you'll see most of the potential debate centered in higher education is, again, I think there's going to need to be a real look. Most of our Pell Grant and student loan systems were built 55 years ago, around 18 to 24-year-olds going to traditional public and private four-year schools. We have a lot of important innovations going on around this country with boot camps and other type of training companies that will And the fact we've got these working adults that need to go back to school and can't go back to a traditional college, so we've got the explosion of online opportunities. And that's where I think most of the focus will hopefully be, is to try to modernize the financial aid and accreditation and accountability processes to help spur change and not smother change. And I really frankly believe that a lot of the federal programs in the last couple of years have been smothering change, smothering innovation. And if I had a magic wand for the new secretary of the new Congress, it would be to really help them figure out ways to spur change, spur innovation, spur modernization versus smothering all of those mm-hmm. issues.
And you mentioned in your remarks both current president, former governor Mitch Daniels, and also Purdue. He, as you know well, and you know him well, he annually publishes an open letter to supposedly the citizens of Purdue, but really pretty much everybody in the state. And the theme this year in particular was on innovation, but the theme for him every year really is in looking at higher education and four-year, in particular, undergraduate education, and trying to figure out how to make it worth it and how to make it, frankly, worth the kind of debt that people are incurring to mm-hmm. to go to higher education institutions. In both your experience at the federal level, but also in what you're doing now, what about that side of the equation? What are you thinking about and giving advice to higher education leaders in terms of how they need to change, how their mission, like your mission, needs to be in evolution?
Yeah, David, and it's a great question. I failed to mention one of our most important initiatives that we're going to be launching, and stay tuned in the next month or so, but we've been engaged with the Gallup organization. It's the most prestigious and oldest polling company in America. And we have about 100,000 interviews that have been conducted, and we'll be doing about 10,000 a month. And really, this new first-of-its-kind daily education tracking poll is going to be the voice of the consumer. And we've got all of these other wonderful measurements out there of inputs and outputs. But I really believe it's the voice of the consumer that is the most important voice that's been missing from all of our policy debates, all of the different initiatives that are out there. And until we get the voice of the consumer and figure out a way to also communicate with that voice of the consumer, we're going to be missing the mark. And Purdue had the Purdue Gallup Index, which was, again, kind of a pioneering step in this direction. To really help, especially with alumni, better understand, what the value of their degree was and what pathway it helped get them propelled in life.
Mm-hmm. And also, Bill, on the policy side, again, even today, there's an important meeting going on in the Oval Office with leaders of the automotive industry about keeping jobs here or bringing jobs back from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And reshoring or avoiding outsourcing is obviously a topic of huge pertinence here, but so is automation. And that's an issue that has not yet been discussed very much, and yet I think for a number of our employers here, we see increasingly that the nature of work itself is changing, and the skills, therefore, that students and people coming out of higher education need to have are radically different from what they were a few years ago. Can you talk a little bit about, and I know you believe that too, but can you talk a little bit about how some of the new programming that you're doing at USA Funds is going to address that particular issue?
Yeah, it's a very important area, and there's, again, some great organizations around the country, the University Innovation Alliance and some others that are really working to try to bring the voices of college presidents and leaders together to address these issues. But this is also something that we're really looking at from a business standpoint, to how we can really transform the amount of data that is out there, both at the government level, but also at the institutional level, and frankly at the business level, and how can we really better use this data and utilize this data to drive the transparency for families, but also to drive decision making opportunities. I think the one thing that I just again go back to is it's not even trying to align our current 5 million jobs, but it's also looking down the road 5 years from now and understanding what are going to be our manufacturing, our technology, our other jobs. And it's the kids that are graduating from high school this year that are going to be in that pipeline of what our economy, what our jobs are going to look like 5 years from now. And again, to get those systems aligned so that universities can also start maybe pivoting a little bit to try to draw more students into those degree programs that will help shape those students for the future job opportunities. But I also tell you, this there's some really important things. I touched on one of them with competency-based education, and I do believe that this is really an important movement for our country. Western Governors University, I think nationwide, has about 60,000 students. I went to their graduation ceremony a few years ago, and the average graduate was 36 years old, and we were in the Huntsman Center, and with 20,000 people, and I think 15,000 of them were babies, and it was probably the most boisterous in a different way of a graduation ceremony that I'd ever been in, but we really need to look at different models to really go out and, again, not just look at the high school graduates, that's very important, but to look at our broader population and what we can do to open up those same opportunities where we're going to have the business openings down the road.
And probably also to continue to look at the business models themselves.
Absolutely.
And see how they're changing and going through transformation as well.
Yep.
So here's a question for you via Twitter.
Donald Trump?
No, no, it's not. I don't think so. Maybe it is. Maybe he's looking for some free advice. How do we curb rising textbook costs? A $350 textbook is nearly $11 a day for a two-day class every week.
Yeah, it's a great question. I'm not an expert on this, but I will tell you the textbook industry between Houghton Mifflin and McGraw-Hill and Pearson, this is an issue that they're wrestling with every day. These are big multi-billion dollar publicly traded giants. But it really, you know, trying to take textbooks digital is a very important priority. And again, I look at my 10 grandchildren, they're all under 8 years old, and my little 2-year-old granddaughter knows how to use this thing better than I do and figure out where to go and how to do things. And I just, it's going to be the way of the future. I also have a 34-year-old daughter who's a school teacher. And again, just the difference in the way that old people like me at 57 are wired versus the way she's been taught to use technology and tools are very different. So it's, I do think the textbook industry is either going to be left in the dust or hopefully they'll be able to modernize themselves and to, you know, continue to create the digital platforms that they need. And it really, you know, it's a cost issue, but it's also an efficiency and it's a learning tool issue as well. Mm-hmm.
There's a question on student loan debt. I'm not surprised we got one since both you and I used some pretty frightening statistics out there. One that I actually didn't use, but that is, I think, pertinent for this question, is that of the student loan debt that's currently outstanding, I think there was a national report in the last couple of days, that like 50% of it at this point either is going unpaid or hasn't had a single dollar paid on it of principal for the past 7 years. So not only is it a big number, it's a big number that is begging to what's going to happen next. This question is wondering what percent can we expect will be repaid, and if we don't fix this problem, could we end up with a financial crisis as we had with mortgage debt in 2008-2009?
Yeah, it's very important, and even go back more than a decade earlier when we had the savings and loan crisis. I don't know if you all remember the early 1990s with that, but that was all over about $100 billion, and it really was an unsettling time when we were also in a kind of a down economic time. But I do believe that there are some challenges out there. We have had a bit of a, there's been a lot of national conversations about free college, and those are important conversations, and about debt-free college. And that is very important conversation to have prospectively, but we do need to make sure, and I think, again, one of the things is information for students that they understand that this is a loan, not a grant, what their obligations are. And, you know, on the one hand, if you are able to get a college education, your earnings are going to be at least 3 times that of a high school student. And so I think, you know, we've had a bit of a national conversation these last couple of years about borrow as much as you want, take as long as you want to pay it back, and when all is said and done, we'll forgive it. Versus this is a gift to you to help you from a human capital standpoint to go and make yourself better. You're going to be better off. And it just, you know, why labor workers' taxes should be paying for somebody that's, you know, gone out and got a higher education and then default on their student loan. in a flippant way is just is not the answer. And so I think part of this is cultural, part of this is making sure that students also understand the obligation they have, but also the benefit that they're going to have from being able to get a college education, and they're going to be much more better off than their next-door neighbor that didn't have the chance to go to college. So this is something that, you know, with the $1.4 trillion in debt and growing $150 billion every year, it's a very important topic and, you know, one that was on the campaign trail, and I think it's going to be probably the top issue in higher education that's going to be confronting the new administration.
And it confronts a wide array of people, a wide array of citizens. Question for you on what's the role of participation and funding programs for students at for-profit institutions? And how is what role can sort of third parties and folks in the funding sector and the program sector play in making sure that those institutions also are really providing a product of use, since it's often a product that's fairly expensive?
Yeah, it's a great question. And again, there are a lot of wonderful organizations out there, especially in the technical and training worlds, that are helping students, again, through maybe a more flexible means to be able to get the skill sets and the education that they need. But at the same time, there's a very important responsibility for these organizations to be accountable. And I think, again, that's really the balance that of the federal programs in terms of getting them modernized. You know, having these one-size-fit-all programs, you know, to fit Notre Dame or to fit a technical school or to a public university, there needs to be, I think, a differentiated approach to how the programs are administered, the types of degrees, the type of certificates that our students are getting. And I think it's important to have all colleges accountable for the effective administration of this $180 billion of taxpayer money that's coming out every year.
We have time for one last question, and it's serendipitous. This is another Twitter question. And actually, when I close us out here in just a moment, I'm going to announce that our next speaker for the Economic Club next month will be Dr. Sue Elsperman, who is the new leader of Ivy Tech Community College. This question is, with a new leader at Ivy Tech, we have a chance to improve outcomes. What would you like to see done to achieve that? So keep in mind that people will be paying attention next month.
Ask Carol. Carol's a former head of Ivy Tech. But, you know, actually, I think our community and technical schools are going to be a very important part of the solution going forward. And I, again, I think the flexibility, the ability to, you know, work with the working adults, especially the population that I mentioned, are very important. And I also just, again, I'm just very grateful for Sue taking on this challenge with Ivy Tech, because around this country, again, our community college systems are not all that old. A lot of them, most of them started up in the 1970s, expanded in the 1980s. And I think probably on about two hands you could count what I would call the high quality of community colleges in our country. And it's kind of sad that there are a lot that have 6% job placement rates or graduation rates, and there are others that do a very effective job with it. And again, I think here in Indiana, we're very fortunate with our total higher education system, including Ivy Tech. We all have our challenges, but I'm just very gratified that we've got great leaders at the helm. And I think it's going to be the collaboration as well with the, again, the business community, the government leaders, and the other public and private institutions that are really going to help make a difference.
That's great. Well, with that, we're at our time. Bill, thank you very
thank you,
much. Please join me in thanking Bill Hanson. Thank you. Before we begin our program today, our technical team put a second microphone on Bill so that his remarks could be recorded. That was successful, and they will be broadcast on WFYI Public Radio 90.1 FM on Saturday, February 11th, and can also be available for download at WFYI.org. As I mentioned, kind of stole my own thing here, please join us next month, Monday, February 27th, for Dr. Sue Elsperman, the new leader of Ivy Tech Community College, who's coming to talk with us about the changes she is preparing to bring and enable students and workers to find better paying opportunities in the state. I think this is a terrific dialogue we've started in the new year, and look forward to that. Information tickets for that program, as always, can be found at our website, economicclubofindiana.com. Our deal with you is you're out here by 1:30. It's 1:30. Thank you very much for coming today.